Sarathiel, the thing about the administrant not knowing you're gone, you don't have things set up so that the team doesn't know you're gone, right?
Oh, no. I mean, it was mostly, like, I had pictured some Sherlock Holmesian bullshit, like, you know, bribing a guard in just the right way, or, like, leaving a lump under the bed, like, some, like, elaborate thing, like, that if you don't look too closely...
We can maintain the fiction for a week. Okay.
Yeah. He's fully aware that he can't keep this fiction up forever, but it should give him a little bit of time before people start, you know, capital N, noticing that the God Eater is no longer under anyone's control.
Good, because that gives the team time to get out of town before your illusion fails. We'll start out with Gwen. Now, I think your mom had already broached the topic of how are we going to tell your father that I'm alive?
Yeah.
And the fact that we had to tell your father that I'm alive before we get home. Can't just spring that on him or he'll have a heart attack.
Oh, did we agree to that? I feel like that's not what we agreed on.
I thought you had agreed that you were going to use the sending stones to at least tell him that you were coming home.
Oh, yeah. We said we were going to tell him I was coming home. I wasn't going to tell him that she was there.
Okay. Good to know.
What could possibly go wrong?
I am an anxious person, and I know that my father is an anxious person, and nobody needs to be in a situation where he has, like, an entire week to think about it. It's a bad idea.
Interesting. What do you do to get ready to leave? Do you do anything special, or is it just kind of quiet, and you just say your goodbyes quietly?
I pack all of my books. It is an entire cart. There's not actually room for people anymore. We have to walk.
Nope. We're vetoing some of those books.
What do you mean you're vetoing some of my books?
The horses need a break.
They'll be okay.
Clear misunderstanding for how pack animals work.
I start digging through my spell book. I'm like, I'm sure I've got something in here. It's gonna... You know what? I don't think I took levitate, but I could go back to the library. It's fine. I have a library card now.
No, Gwen, we don't need to bring all of these home. You are not going to have time for this.
Okay, well, you're not going to have time with them, right? But, I mean, I'm going to have something to do while you and Dad catch up on, like, 30 years of history.
And you don't think one or two would suffice?
Absolutely not.
I do not understand you, sport.
Okay, look, I will settle for 50 books, okay? That's my compromise, and I'm making a big sacrifice.
Oh my god, you're worse than Ember. You're worse than Ember.
Look, I have to have at least 5 books for the ride there, and then there's going to have to be another 5 for the way back. And then I'm going to need at least 30 for the entire time that we're there staying with them, because I'm going to read roughly like half a book a day. So just look, it's going to add up really quickly.
Heavens forbid you reread something.
Yes. Thank you. I'm so glad you understand.
I don't. I really don't.
Anyways, it's just this box. And he just, like, hands her a giant box that's filled to the brim with books.
I mean, luckily she's strong enough to hold this, but, like, really?
Yes, really.
All right, 1 crate of books. Okay, we can deal with that.
I think that's it. Yeah, I don't need anything else. We're good to go.
Clothes?
Clothes? Clothes. Clothes. Yeah, sure. He grabs, like, a robe out of a pile of dirty laundry, and he puts it in the crate of books.
I know your father raised you better than that.
It's fine. He's at college. He's got half his clothes at home.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay. All right. We'll talk hygiene on the way.
I shower, like, at least twice a week, so I don't know what you're talking about. You should see Jared down the hall.
I have. So you guys hit the road. Tell me a little bit about the village that you grew up in.
I think it's very, very sleepy. It's beautiful. It's like on like a high cliff and great views of the surrounding countryside and like elegantly architected buildings because it is an elven village. And it has a very big central library, which I spent a lot of time in as a child.
You really needed all these books.
100%. I read all those books. I read all of those books already. At least twice. I feel like we would have a town on the outskirts. It's got like a nice little cottage and like a garden and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely little French estate.
Oh my god, it's a suburb.
Yes, absolutely. 100%. It 100% is a suburb. What makes you think that he's not a little, like, yuppie from the
So yuppie.
All right, so I need to know what you're going to tell your dad.
I mean, the plan for now is just to be like, here's mom. So I'm just telling him I'm coming home for a break. And also I'm going to tell him that I've got a really big surprise. I can't wait till he sees it.
The trip is pretty uneventful. You took some of the safer roads, and you and your mom managed to lie low. You don't draw attention.
I spent the entire time trying to show her spells because we're outside. And I'm like, well, nobody can get mad if I do it out here. And so I try on multiple occasions to cast things like Tidal Wave. I really want to show her off my Black Tentacle spell.
Oh, God.
I conjure some like, elementals and shit.
All right. It's a decently small town. Like, a lot of folks know you, and they are excited when you are coming home. So it depends on how subtle you want to be about getting your mom in before the entire town knows and tells your dad.
Yeah, did I think about that?
Here's a way that you can get yourself out of it. Did your dad move after your mom died? Like, did he move with you to a different place?
No, I think I'm in my childhood home. I think he had, like, a garden he really loved, and, like, it still, like, it hurt, but it still reminded him of my mom.
Ouch, my heart breaks, but okay.
I think he would think about the fact that, like, we still want to be careful and people would recognize her. So he's going to have her wear a cloak, like, put her hood up. And they won't go through, like, the main town. They'll take kind of the back roads.
Okay. That's fair. She obviously doesn't want to draw more attention than she has to. You know your town. You know the ways in and out. You've probably snuck out more times than you definitely let your dad know.
Oh, yeah.
You sneak her in the back way. And you guys lived in the burbs anyway, so it's not like it's hard to avoid notice if you're careful. And I think it is dusk, and your dad knew that you would be arriving roughly today, just based on the journey time. And I think he is sitting out on the porch.
I'm really close, and I missed him a lot. So as I get closer, I see him, and I drop all my stuff, and I just, like, run and, like, give him a giant flying hug.
And he catches you. Bumblebee! It's so good to have you home!
Oh, it's been so long. I missed you, Dad. I missed you a lot.
He is just hugging you for all that he is worth, and I don't think he's noticed yet.
Has he noticed my hair?
Oh, God. I think as you, like, ran over, your hood fell down, and, like, now he does the, like, whole pushing you back to look at you, and... When did you do this to your hair?
I did it while I went at school. Doesn't it look cool? It looks really cool, doesn't it? Like, giving him a big grin. Like, I know he doesn't think it's cool.
He makes just kind of like a... yeah, it's sure something.
I was thinking about pastel blue next, but I wasn't sure. I don't know, we'll have to talk about it. I think there's some, like, a lot of options for new colors.
I mean, your old hair was so nice.
Eh, that was kind of boring. You know, just like a little bit.
Let's go get your stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he's looked up and he's seen that you had a companion with you. Stella has just been hanging back kind of nervously by the horses. Like, she's not quite ready. Like, she's been hyping herself up for a week, but she's had all of the anxiety of meeting her husband again. You spared your dad, but you didn't spare your mom.
Oh, dear.
She's a warrior. He's a nervous scholar.
What, warriors don't have feelings?
No. I look at Dad, and I say, so, remember how I said I had a surprise?
Stella?
Oh, man. That was much faster than I thought.
She had pulled her hood down. It's good to see you again, Emildor. We'll explain everything inside.
Yeah, we should probably get inside.
Your dad ignores that and just runs over and pulls her into a tight hug. Doing the whole touching her face, like, how are you real? How is this happening? Stella just pats him on the cheek, is like, it's okay, we'll explain it, but can we go inside, please, love? He lets himself be guided into his own house by his dead wife. So, Chaz, I'm assuming that you fixed up the bracer.
Yes, because it's time to try again. You know, give it a few days and then revisit the project with fresh eyes.
Describe your attempt again. What are you trying this time?
After being emotionally vulnerable with Bestie, even though, you know, it is Tanya, he's like, wow, that did not feel fun. I didn't like that at all. I experience emotions and I process them. Not having a good time. You know, if we can, you know, just warp maybe. First, we have to test to make sure it works.
Okay. So remind me what you're trying to do. You were trying to find a trace, or what are you trying to do?
Yes, that is to see if the first quest, to see if there is an Algodon in this plane, in this timeline.
All right, roll me an Arcana.
Okay.
It's a okay roll, but considering you have a +8 to Arcana.
Right.
So you're checking in this plane, and surprisingly, this time you do get some kind of reading. It's not really a clear reading, but you do have something. It's actually kind of nearby. Seems like maybe one of the schools in the Conclave.
Oh, that is way more shocking. He's like, oh, what? So close? Huh. And I never knew.
So what are you going to do with that information?
Oh, I'm immediately investigating. He's like, all right, great. Time to go there then.
The bracer, it's not like it beep, beep, beeps you there, but you get a pretty decent idea of how to go about finding whatever has set it off. You made the thing, like, you know how it works, generally. You're an engineer, so, like, some of it is a little trial and error.
Right.
Last time, very much error.
It's fine. He's used to that. He's like, eh, not all experiments work. It's okay. It's science!
The closer you get, the more you're kind of questioning the science, though. Because it's leading you to one of the colleges, but it's not one of the bigger colleges. It's leading you into a library, which doesn't really mesh with what you knew of your Algodon.
It's like, okay, maybe he's researching gardening techniques. Yeah.
He's looking up how to get rid of flesh-eating worms.
Yes, for his prize-winning tomatoes.
I don't want to know why flesh-eating worms live on tomatoes, but, you know, we'll just stick a pin in that.
It's fine.
It's one of the smaller libraries, so it's not nearly as frequented as the Vault of the Sages or other areas. Inside, you only see a couple elves and a human.
Head tilt.
Now, the human looks a little bit like Algodon. He's got the dark skin. He's got dreads. He does have vitiligo on his face and his hands, but he's not a Genasi.
This is a very curious development. Okay, he's going to approach. And, excuse me, do you perhaps know anybody named Algodon?
He looks up. No. Sorry. Wish I could help you. I don't think anybody around here goes by that.
It's just you look so familiar. I'm so sorry to be forward, but have we met before?
I think I'd remember, but no, I don't think so. I'm Hayden, and he offers a hand.
Hayden. Well, it is pleasure to meet you. I am Chasmere, Artificer Extraordinaire.
Well, that's the first Artificer I've met. Not a lot of them here.
Well, I can't imagine why not. I mean, there's definitely great scenery, he winks.
I don't think a lot of the science-minded go into law and politics. And you realize you're in the law library.
And he's just immediately like, oh, yeah, that's true that you have a point. Law, interesting. He's gonna tap his bracer like, are you sure you're working properly?
And he kind of gets a look at the bracer and, like, the fact you said Artificer plus the bracer is like, wait, are you with AppTap?
Who's asking?
Hayden, I just...
I know, but I mean, are you asking, like, are you going to hold this against me in a court of law is what I want to know. Ha, you're very funny and very adorable. Fine.
No, I hadn't heard that they were doing any recruiting drives or anything, so is there, like, a portal nearby or something? Is that why you're looking for this Algodon?
At that question, he sort of scratches the back of his neck. It's more of a personal quest, really.
He tries not to look disappointed.
Did you perhaps have interest?
I do. My advisor, she a couple of her family members work there, so I like everything that they've done for the city. They're helping us a lot.
Oh boy. Chaz used to think that too. He just, you know, maintains a smile. Always doing good. That's us.
Yes, you have found the Aptap fanboy.
He's just like, all right, well, it was wonderful to meet you. I must continue my search, but good luck.
All right. Thanks, I guess. And you don't probe into his background at all.
He's just like, I love Aptap. And he's like, okay, great. Bye.
All right. So Hayden is gone from the storyline now.
He was just going to go into a different room and like tap and be like, is this thing working? Like, really? Are you sure? Why did you lead me here?
Yeah, no, this is who you're looking for. Like, all the signals are right. And you remember that Belle told you about shadows and how shadows, at least for dragons, are not the same in every world.
He sort of has, if there's a mirror around, he's going to follow a mirror. He like looks in the mirror. He's like, really? An Aptap fanboy, Chaz? Really? That, oh God, your taste gets worse and worse.
It's fine. You can teach him. You can train him.
Yeah, he definitely ruminates on that whole shadows business, and he's just like, way more different than I was expecting. Especially after he's fresh off of the ritual. That just happened. They broke the stamp, and he's like, people who are very pro-apt up, he's like, nope, 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 nope.
You can still educate, you know what, if he's just, like, the next time you see him, just, like, sit him down and be like, listen, Aptap is terrible, and then just, like, start listing off all their crimes, and then being like, also, you're a fantasy lawyer, do you feel like helping me take them down?
Serathiel hadn't really known what to expect. Past vague dreams of empty, palatial halls, and the impersonal reports accounting his early life, he had very little concept of where he'd come from. He's surprised when he finally comes through the doors, though he suspects he'd be surprised by anything. The floors are tile, red and black and gold, in intricate patterns of squares and octagons, polished to a glossy shine. There are no walls past those which mark the very edge of the building itself. Rather, the massive arched ceiling was supported by a series of evenly spaced columns, various areas demarcated by sheer golden curtains. These things are, of course, ancillary to the main feature of Pandaren's hoard, which is its occupants. Dozens, perhaps hundreds, of people cross in every direction. Men and women and those between or beyond, elves and humans, tieflings and genasi, and Asimar and centaur and Yunti, all of them glittering with jewelry and glistening with oil, wearing little or nothing at all, and all of them so beautiful they almost defy description. Serathiel knows that gold and gems were the hoard of a typical dragon, but he also knows that his father would not be typical. He realizes, with a sinking feeling, it is the people that are his hoard. Concubines. Are they prisoners here? The door Serathiel had come through is unlocked and unguarded. He suspects because a dragon would defend its hoard better than any lock or guard ever could. He watches their faces as they pass and finds no trace of fear or anger, but also no trace of anything else. They seem empty, somehow. Bewitched, perhaps? Or something worse. Sarathiel pushes in slowly. He's out of place here in his breastplate and heavy boots, but no one he passes seems to mind. He passes one area with a pile of pillows on the floor, where a handful of concubines sleep peacefully. He passes another area where three of them gasp and writhe together on a massive bed, delirious with pleasure. Finally, he sees his mother. In any other place, she'd have stood out, but here, she's little more than one beautiful body among hundreds. Sarathiel knows right away who she is. He sees echoes of his own face and hers, the slight upturn of her nose, the long, dark hair, the delicate fingers. She's intoxicated. Sarathiel can't immediately tell on what. He crouches down beside her.
Mother?
There's no response. He tries again, reaching out to her shoulder and shaking her gently.
Mother, can you hear me?
Pale eyes flutter open, hazed over with whatever it is she's taken. She stares at him as though Sarathiel is a stranger, which Sarathiel realizes with a flinch is precisely what he is.
Hello, Mother. I suppose it would be too much to hope that you recognize me.
She really is a spectacular beauty, even draped backwards over a settee, so delirious she can barely move.
Mother? Am I your mother?
Sarathiel swallows.
Yes, you are.
Absurdly, she giggles.
How delightful. My name is Sarathiel. I was taken away from you when I was still an infant. Do you remember?
She's still giggling. She doesn't answer. Or perhaps the giggling is the answer. Without quite understanding why, Sarathiel feels a swell of anxiety and disappointment in his belly.
Please,
he says.
I came all this way to find you, to meet you. I have so many questions. She won't give you a clear answer, you know.
Sarathiel stands up and spins around so quickly he nearly loses his balance. Standing so close to him, it was surely magic that kept him from hearing is, well, Sarathiel can only assume it's his father.
Pandaren.
He's so massive. 30 feet long at least from snout to tail, wings folded against his body, long neck arched to look down at Sarathiel. His eyes, Sarathiel notices with a twist of nausea, are golden, just like his own.
The very same. And you must be my wayward son.
Sarathiel swallows. Though meeting him had been part of the plan, seeing him just there, in front of him, the largest and most dangerous thing in the room, perhaps in all of Sigil, is another matter entirely.
Does my form intimidate you? Here.
A swirl of light and magic, and suddenly it's an elf standing in front of him, though several heads taller than any elf ought to be. 7, perhaps 8 feet altogether, dressed in extravagant robes encrusted with gems and gold embroidery. In this form, his hair is golden and so long that it drags on the floor behind him.
Better? Not much,
Sarathiel admits. Pandaren chuckles. He lifts one hand, each finger glittering with multiple rings, and places it beneath Sarathiel's chin, tilting it up.
My, my, my,
Pandaren says.
You are a lovely one, aren't you? There is so much of your mother in you. But you have my eyes.
Sarathiel takes a half step back when Pandaren's fingers lower to his throat, a reaction as instinctual as flinching away from fire.
I just want to talk,
he says.
I mean no harm. No, you don't,
Pandaren says.
I'd have sensed it if you did, and you'd already be dead. You'd kill your own son?
Sarathiel asks without meaning to. There's another low chuckle.
My dear boy,
Pandaren croons.
I'd kill everyone in Sigil to defend my hoard.
Sarathiel supposes he shouldn't be surprised. A dragon is a dragon is a dragon, after all. He wonders without meaning to how much of that instinct to hoard is in his blood, too.
Why come you back to your father, then?
He asks.
To unravel secrets of the arcane, to unlock the power in your bloodline? Though I see you've already started that on your own. No, nothing like that.
Sarathiel admits.
I came because I...
It feels stupid, almost childish, to say it out loud. But it is the truth, and he fears the consequences of lying to an ancient red dragon in his own hoard.
I'm here because I want to find my family. Well, then congratulations are in order. You found it. I am Pandaron, the great and terrible Scourge of Onorok, beloved disciple of Tiamat, and I am your father, Sarathiel.
Before Sarathiel can formulate an answer, one of Pandaron's long arms drapes itself over Sarathiel's back and rests on his shoulder. Soon, he's being steered away through the throng of passing concubines, who all titter and croon as they see them. Sarathiel shoots one last desperate look over his shoulder at his mother, but she appears to have already fallen asleep.
You should think about staying here,
Pandaron says.
Our relationship could be of tremendous mutual benefit.
It could?
Certainly. I could teach you how to be the dragon you are meant to be. I could teach you all I know of magic and the planes. And I could offer you defense from all that threatens.
There was a small, weak part of Sarathiel that wanted to weep at the mere offer. It was the part of him that was, fundamentally, an orphan, and had always wanted a family in whatever form he could have it. Still,
such gifts do not come freely. Perhaps not, but the price need not be too great. You would join my hoard.
Sarathiel stops, stumbling over his own footsteps. Pandaron gets only a few steps further before he seems to realize it, and turns to look back.
Your hoard?
Sarathiel parrots back at him.
Your hoard of concubines? Do you see any suffering among my lovers?
Pandaron says, gesturing with both hands to those around them.
Do you see any signs of mistreatment? I am not a cruel master.
As if that was even close to the point.
I'm your son! So long as you don't go changing your sex and getting pregnant,
Pandaron said with a mild shrug, as if it's nothing, as if they're discussing a minor business proposition, not incest. Sarathiel stares, mouth open, but no words come. Suddenly he has a better understanding of the God-Eater than he ever thought he would. Suddenly, it doesn't seem so unthinkable that the pampered son of a powerful dragon would turn into history's greatest monster. He summons all his wherewithal to answer in as firm a fashion as he dares.
With respect, Pandaron, the great and terrible,
he whispers,
I will have to decline.
We're gonna switch back to Gwen and the family. I feel like your dad has, like, defaulted into must-make-tea mode because there's a lot to take in. No, there's no way that his dead wife is sitting on his sofa with his son. Like, there's no way. No, it's fine. You're just having a little mental breakdown and tea will make this better.
I feel like I'm sitting there awkwardly, like, bouncing up and down. Like, my knees are kind of, like, bouncing up and down nervously. Sort of look back and forth at, like, the kitchen where he's making tea and mom. And I'm just like, well, this is going well.
Badly.
Oh.
Go help him. Go talk to him a bit.
Do you think that would help? I don't know about that one.
I mean, for me, it's only been a matter of months. I don't know him the way you do.
That's depressing. I stand up. Oh, I didn't want to think about it that way. I walked into the kitchen. And I sort of like lean up against the counter where, next to where he's making tea, and I'm like, man, I didn't think you were going to take the pink hair this badly.
Gwynhead, how is this possible?
Well, that is... Look, Dad, I can't really tell you. I took an internship, and it's a...
Your dad turns his dad eyes on you. You know the dad eyes of guilt. You're just gonna try to wheedle out of that one? Seriously?
Don't give me that look. It's classified.
Classified? Who are you interning for?
It's probably classified. Well, they didn't really approve of it, so I suppose it's technically I'm classifying it. Yeah, so it's classified.
Gwynedd Battlestar.
This is possibly an organization that does time travel maintenance. Potentially that. But that's all I can tell you, Dad. That's it. That's all.
You work for a time travel agency? Is that what we're going to go with here?
Yes.
You can't just change time, Gwynedd. You can't.
Well, see, that's what I thought. But actually, that's not true.
Gwynedd, I don't know who you're becoming. You left to go to school, and then you got this internship, and you don't call, and you just...
I called just the other day. Look, Dad, I was always going to grow up. I couldn't stay the same forever.
Grow up and meddle with time?
Well, look, I didn't plan for it to happen this way, but yeah, that's where we're at. Look, I just need you to trust me, okay? Aren't you glad to have Mom home?
Of course I am, but...
But what?
Gwynedd, I was starting to heal.
Well, now you don't have to.
Either he's going to notice your eye or your mom is going to come in. Do you have a preference on which order things happen in?
I feel like one at a time. Let's do Mom first.
I think she comes in and rests a hand on his shoulder and says, Darling, I know this must be difficult for you. It's strange for me. I've not missed you nearly as long. But I have missed you. And I wouldn't have advised the path that was taken.
I cross my arms at both of you.
But I do appreciate getting to know our boy. You did such a good job raising him. Stella is definitely breaking down. She had been remarkably well put together after coming to the future. Too well put together. But Gwen, you're a young kid. You don't really understand a lot of the traumatic stuff that goes on in adult life yet.
Yeah.
Neither of them is handling this particularly well. But she's allowing some of those cracks to show through. I wouldn't have hurt you for the world, but you know what I am. You know that I'm a soldier, and you knew that it was a risk. And he just tears up. Of course I did, Stella, but I never thought I'd actually lose you. And they both cock to the fact that you're still in the room, Gwen.
I sort of look awkwardly, and I'm like, you do. I didn't get the books from the... I'm gonna go. And he just sprints out of the room. I think he goes out and starts just trying to lift the books, and it's not going well, so it's just gonna take a while.
They're gonna talk for a little bit. Your dad's not taking it well. Obviously, he is excited to have her back, but it is strange. And it's weird for her, because like I said, she's only been missing him for a couple months. She never had the experience of actually being dead. This is not a thing that she's had to deal with. I think we're gonna switch back over to Chaz. You have tried using the bracer several more times. Now, it's probably taken several days, but it's also time travel, so who knows? Mostly it's been frustrating and unsuccessful. You're not finding signs. You're finding more Haydens, basically. You're finding folks that are close, but not quite. And it's getting frustrating. And you think maybe that frustration is why you're starting to feel just kind of a little watched. It's either your frustration or Viernan's warnings or something, but like you've got this nagging feeling that you haven't really felt since you were in Vermilion.
Oh boy, he has really good memories, you guys. That was a great trip. He doesn't like that feeling at all, obviously. I'm sure it's just stress from overwork, because unlike some people, Tanya, I know how to take a break and have fun.
Roll me another Arcana roll.
Ooh, not so good.
Eh, it's okay. You make it to what looks like the right kind of plane or the right kind of situation. Like, it's clearly the aftermath of Silvery Moon. It's clearly a rebuilding. But it doesn't quite feel the same as the one that you found before. And you're frustrated, and as you're, frantically, pushing numbers and just kind of, probably, are you ready to give up for the day, or what are you feeling after yet another failure?
He's probably, setting hard limits for himself, all right, we will try one more time, and then that's it. We are done for today, because there are only so many setbacks I can take.
You plug it in, and, there's the usual small tremor as the portal opens. As you are stepping through, you get a glimpse in your peripheral vision of a very, very familiar figure. It's your brother.
Oh boy.
And like I say, it was in your peripheral vision, but you know him.
Mm.
This tall, drow, super long hair. He is dressed in raiding gear. Clearly, he is on a hunt. And you think he's following you.
Chaz immediately falls on his ass backward. Completely falls down and just shit, fuck, no.
Do you close the portal that's in front of you now?
Yes, absolutely. He was like, shit. No, fuck, he can't be here. Not.
The portal closes with just a snap of magic. You haven't even taken in your surroundings, where you step through in your panic. As the minutes drag on and no one appears, you start to very slowly come out of this panic attack. Very, very slowly. It takes effort.
Mm-hmm.
You have to force yourself to remember how to breathe, how to calm down. You're okay. You're taking stock. I am grounded. I am here. I'm not in the Underdark anymore.
I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm safe. I'm safe now. He's not here. He's not here. It's fine.
Behind you, you hear Algadon quietly ask, Who's not here? Chaz? Are you okay?
He immediately whips around
It's him. You're in the correct world. It is him. It is your Algadon. It is the one that you met before. You're in the grove.
Wow. Finally! Do you have any idea how long I've been searching for you?
I mean, I turned that question back on you, but our histories aren't quite the same.
Mm.
He offers you a hand up.
And Chaz takes it.
Who did you see?
Right. How much do you know about your Chaz's history? I guess my history. Well, yeah.
He pauses and considers carefully, because it has been a long time. Objectively, you did leave him as a sword for 100 years.
It's fine. I saved him. It's fine. They were limited options.
Memory is a bit hard, but he can figure it out through context clues. He saw you grounding yourself. He saw your panic. And he saw the way you were clutching your leg. It was him, wasn't it? Your brother?
It was. Last I left, I only had one, but who knows how many she's had by now.
Well, he didn't follow you through. It was only you that came here.
Right.
Do you want to come in for something?
That would be lovely. Thank you.
He offers you an arm because, like, he sees that you're a little rattled and, like, you probably are not as easy to balance right now. Yes, you have a magical prosthetic, but it's not perfect. There are worse pain days, and I feel like this is the kind of thing that would cause a flare.
I was just going to say, I'm like definitely seeing brother triggered pain, and he immediately forgets that he has a prosthetic and is acting like it's still severed, like it's gone.
He is definitely offering his help to you to help you get inside. The night market in Sigil is a subdued affair. For how many people crisscross the busy streets, from stall to stall, few words are exchanged. It's a backdrop of quiet mumbling and clinking coins, of subtle glances and hurried footsteps. It's better, Sarathiel thinks, not to ask what dark deals are made, and he contents himself to observe from a distance, seated against the outer wall of a potion shop. He's tired. More tired than he's ever been. He'd left his father's hoard and walked and walked and walked till his legs protested the mere thought of movement, and he'd sat down instead. The second scroll Shemeshka gave him is still in his pocket. He thumbs it occasionally, indolently, and does not use it. He's so very, very tired. Well, was it worth the trip? Sarathiel looks up, though he doesn't need to. He'd recognize his twin soul's voice anywhere.
Hello, Belantiel,
he answers flatly. Belantiel sinks down beside him, and for a time they sit together in silence, watching the denizens of Sigil hurry in every direction. I did try to warn you, Belantiel says eventually.
That you did,
Sarathiel answers. Though the truth was he'd have come here no matter what anyone said. He had to see it for himself. He had to know. And now he knows, and all he wants to do is go back to not knowing. There's another lapse of silence. When Belantiel next speaks, it's with forced jocularity. Well, look on the bright side, he says. Now you can put this whole terrible affair to rest. Your father's a monster. And you never have to speak to him again.
I just...
Sarathiel sighs.
I wish it could be different.
Belantiel clicks his tongue. Oh, why? Because you're so desperate for a father figure.
Because I've never had a family before,
Sarathiel says.
And I'd hoped... It feels so stupid to say it now, but I... Gods, I just hoped...
It is stupid. Belantiel says. You don't need your father. You only need me.
Will you not even try to understand?
Sarathiel asks desperately.
Can you not summon a shred of empathy and try to...
Irritated, Belantiel cuts him off. I don't understand. You're right. I've never had a family either. Dragon, remember. But at least I don't endlessly whinge about it. Sarathiel's taken aback.
You think that's what this is?
We're supposed to be. We are enough for each other. Families are nothing but a burden. Sarathiel stares, dumbfounded. And though he knows this is likely indicative of some trauma on Belantiel's part, though he seriously doubts Belantiel would ever admit as much out loud, let alone unpack it, the larger part of him reacts with anger. It flares low in his belly.
That's... insane. Do you even realize how insane that sounds?
We're twin soul, Belantiel protests.
Yes, But a castle can't be built with a single stone. Putting all that pressure on one person to be the only thing the partner needs their entire life through, that's not just impractical, that's abusive. It's good, it's healthy, it's normal to have other relationships, platonic and, yes, familial. And I'm not going to let you shame me out of a very simple and fundamental desire to want a family.
I am your family.
No, you're not!
He shouts. Sarathiel stands up. Blantiel stands too. People in the night market are starting to stare.
You are my twin soul, and that means a lot to me, but it cannot and should not mean everything to me.
Blantiel reels back, almost like he'd been physically struck, as though Sarathiel had betrayed him in some earth-shattering way. Sarathiel can only stare back in uncomprehending silence. He doesn't know any other way to explain it to him, and he has a sinking feeling that if Blantiel can't or won't understand it, it may end up being a shard of glass in the beating heart of their fledgling relationship. Fine, Blantiel says, wounded, after a protracted silence. But don't expect me to be happy about being nothing to my twin soul.
You're not!
But he was already gone, in a swirl of magic and the smell of ozone. Sarathiel sighed, pushed a hand through his hair, and swore in Draconic. It was going to be a very long road back to Silvery Moon. Hey everyone, Val here. Thank you for tuning in to the latest episode of Crit Fail Club, Restoration. If you can't wait to hear what happens next, check out our Discord server for episodes in pre-release, or to listen in live as we record. You can join us by going to bit.ly/CFCDiscord. For more information on the show, character biographies, and links to social media, head to our website, critfail.club or critfailclub.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. We don't advertise at all, so if you like what you hear, tell a friend who might also enjoy the show, post on social media about it, or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Full episodes are available on our YouTube channel, bit.ly/CFCchannel, or on other major podcast platforms. Thanks again for tuning in.